starts being quiet, they know we're going to do something. Okay, we'll go ahead and call the Los Osos Groundwater Basin Management Committee meeting to order. First of all, we'll have the Pledge of Allegiance. Bruce, could you please lead us?
Will, would me please. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You're acting as secretary, Rob?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, boy.
Okay. Can you take the roll call, please?
Director Zimmer?
Present.
Director Garfinkel?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Here.
Chairperson Ohilski?
Present. Okay, with that then, we'll take board member, item number four, board member comments. Any brief comments or project updates or any communication that you'd like to disclose? So we'll start with Mark.
Okay, thank you. I have a couple comments on some projects that Golden State's been working on that are beneficial to the basin and some of the efforts that we're making here. So one of them is the nitrate removal system for our Rosina treatment plant. And we're in the planning process for that, probably I would say about 90% of the way through that. We're waiting on the finalizing the permitting and receiving final approval for that. We anticipate that if everything goes accordingly, we should be have this up in towards the end of the year, maybe at the beginning of 2017. And then we've also been talking about the new well that we're drilling at our Los Olivos 5, or Los Olivos plant. We're calling it our well number 5. And so the drilling component of that is complete, and we're waiting for some permitting items to take place, specifically with PG&E. Then we'll move into equipping the well with the pumping equipment at that point. So those projects are moving along good.
Thank you. Bill?
Yes. I have a question on this letter that was sent by the State Water Resource Control Board recommending that they deny our boundary modifications. What's the relationship between these two offices and the State Water Board?
That's an agenda item we're going to discuss.
What's in my executive report?
It says part of his report, so okay. I think we can just address that then, if that's okay, Bill.
Okay.
Yep.
I got nothing.
Okay, and I just wanted to let everybody know we had to reschedule our meeting from last week because we weren't going to be able to make a quorum last week, so that's the reason we rescheduled to this week. So just a heads up
on
that.
Appreciate everybody's flexibility.
Yeah, so I appreciate it. I know that it's probably something we need to look at in the future about coming up with meeting dates and looking at our agendas and making sure this is the best time for all parties involved. So I just lay that out there. Okay, so with that then, we'll go and look at the consent agenda, which is 5A, which is the approval for the minutes and then approval of the budget update and invoice register. If we have any questions, we'll take them now. If we'll take public comment if we don't have any questions. So any questions?
Is this for A and B? Or
Yes, A, 5 A and B, correct.
So, yeah, I do have one comment regarding the budget. So, Golden State, we appreciate the keeping the budget current and providing the information on the budget that we have, but we thought it would be beneficial to have a warrant register with included so that we could go through those specific items that are before us and approve those costs as they occur and look at those closely. So we would appreciate, you know, considering that. And then just a general comment about the MKN invoices and separating those from the ISJ. There was some work that was contracted through the ISJ, and now we need to ensure that we the costs moving forward are associated with the Basin Management Committee.
Yeah, thank
you. I think that would be helpful.
Just a brief staff response there. Have no problem bringing forward a a warrant register for approval. We'll slow payment down a little bit, but not significantly, as long as we're meeting monthly. So I think that's easy enough for staff to do. And for the MKN invoices, that's only for work that was approved last year under the ISJ. If they have any additional work, that will come back to this group for approval, because there's not a specific line item budget for that at this point.
Okay.
So that's all old work under their old arrangement.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. So we'll take public comment. This is public comment only on the consent agenda items, which is 5A and 5B.
Lynette Tornatsky, Los Osos. On my comment on the minutes on 7B, page 3, I think I was referring to educating contractors and plumbers on hot water recirculating devices, which I mean like on-demand tanks or the recirculating devices rather than septic tanks. Thanks.
Good.
Thank you for that clarification.
Mm-hmm. Keith Weimer. Just a couple of points. One is that I noticed on the website that the minutes haven't been posted for the last couple of meetings. So I just want to remind everybody, even though these are more complete minutes, they're still just notes, and they're not going to be exactly accurate. And sometimes they don't reflect sort of the tone or the overall message. Right here, the county should request an amendment to the CDP for this purpose. This is one of the things that's put down for me, and yet I don't believe I've ever said that it should, unless I also said if they believe it is necessary, because I've never believed it's necessary. The other thing I'd mention is just that we have spent $50,000 for one consultant to do studies. We might consider a review of this one consultant, because it's good to get another view. If all the data and information is coming from one source, it makes it just less likely or more likely that there's going to be some bias built into it. Thank you.
Thank you, Keith. Any other comments on 5A and B? Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the committee.
Move approval of consent.
Second.
With Lynette's clarification and Keith's clarification.
Sure. I think this is the classic example of why we should just do action minutes.
Right.
I don't think we need to spend time editing the minutes, but sure.
Okay. You okay with that? All right. We'll take a roll call so you can have something to do around.
Oh, that's great. Director Gibson.
Yes.
Director Garfinkel.
Yes.
Director Zimmer.
Yes.
Chairperson Ohilski.
Yes. Okay. With that, then, we'll move to item 6, which is the Executive Director's Report. And you have a few items on there.
That I do.
And we will get to your question. Bill, we'll get to your question.
Right. Yeah, let me see if county staff was able to attend today. Okay, I might call on you for the
I was planning on
item.
Calling you to answer that question.
So I'll punt to the end of my executive director's report, then ask you to explain the DWR situation. So first, providing a brief update on the zone of benefit analysis. David Tausig and Associates was retained by the flood control district and is proceeding, and we do expect their work product to be forthcoming, perhaps for your June meeting, but certainly for your July meeting, their first work product. They seem to have a good grasp on what we're trying to accomplish. We also did formally approve WSC's grant writing contract. I see Mr. Munns in the audience here, and so they'll be proceeding on their initial work product as well, which we can hopefully bring you back an update for your July BMC meeting. On the water conservation program, I was able to correspond a little bit with the printer's office earlier, and they did confirm that those postcards have been mailed. They didn't hit my mailbox today, and I think others have not received it today, so you should see it tomorrow. But that's definitely in the mailbox. And there's a copy attached to your agenda and posted online if folks are interested in what that postcard says. And we'll be continuing to work with the county to talk about financial structure and advancing the process of our conservation plan from the last meeting. I'm not prepared to do that in detail today. And would ask the county staff, if they could, maybe come forward and give us a little update on basin boundary modification request, and then I'll continue with the rest.
Hi.
If you could respond specifically to Bill's question, I would appreciate it.
My name is Kathy Martin with the county, and basically the State Water Board submitted a letter during the comment period in DWR, public commenting period, responding that they reiterated some tech memo discretions about the boundary modification, and the county is responding to the letter. It should be out this week, and responding that we're reiterating that the proposal will create sustainable groundwater management, and we're reiterating tech memo items to DWR. So basically, the state board letter is an opinion to DWR, who will be doing the boundary process.
Okay. So do we feel that there's error in their contention that 40 feet of alluvium is not enough?
It will be up to DWR responding to the state. The alluvium process still, I think, may need to be studied. We'll see what's determined by DWR. And they should have something respond to us probably in June, recommendations, and then we plan to get together and see what they're saying about the boundary modification.
Good, thank you.
Great.
Thank you. I appreciate you clarifying that for us. It did. As soon as I saw that email go out, it caused some concerns on my part, too. So,
if I might comment, I talked to some senior public works staff who've met with the State Water Board and expressed directly to them last week our concerns with that comment letter. So it's in process, and will certainly be negotiated.
Great. That's good. Right. And Mr. Chair, just a few other comments in my executive director's report, if I could. So we are following up on the creek discharge proposal. We've met and now talked to, as a follow-up, the property owner with the affected domestic well. We don't see any fatal flaws at this point. We've provided all our information to the state Division of Drinking Water and are asking for feedback on our conclusions before we bring that forward for next steps. And so we're hoping that will come back to your June meeting. And then as far as the initial data release from the April 2016 seawater intrusion monitoring, I'm going to talk a little bit about that in my PowerPoint presentation. It's just a snapshot. It's a draft. We're still waiting for some data, but we wanted to get it out as soon as we could. Thank you, and that completes my report.
Appreciate that. Okay, so do we have any public comments on the executive director's report?
Keith Weimer, member of the Los Osos Sustainability Group. Yes, I just wanted to comment on the conservation program, and I'm disappointed that it's not an agenda item this week, and wanted to remind you of the urgency and the fact that everybody's agreed that it is an urgent matter. I'd like to also point out that Coastal Commission has confirmed that $5 million has to be spent by the county, and it doesn't require an amendment, and that because that's the case, and it can also be applied to outdoor water use, including repurposing, it's really hard to accept that there's still a delay to this process. It seems that the county is the one that's probably holding it up at this point, and I request the county once again to expedite the process so we can begin to use it for repurposing. There's still some confusion about what people have to do to actually close out their permit, and so people are still being encouraged to actually abandon their septic tanks, unfortunately. So that just needs to happen right now, and I would appreciate it if the county would not try to continue to negotiate, but would get this money out and in use productively. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments on the executive director's report? Okay, we'll bring it back. I think we'll take a motion to receive and file.
Second.
Okay, all in favor? Mark has a comment here.
Yeah, I have a couple comments on it. So the regarding the water conservation, well, let's just start at the top. The postcards, you know, it would be interesting to see once they are out, receive some feedback on how productive they were, if it did reach, and if there was some benefit to it. You know, we really need to look at how we're reaching out to the people, and you know, we keep talking about how time is of the essence, and we need to make sure that we're implementing the programs as effectively as possible. So just getting some type of feedback, I don't know how to do that, but it'd be nice to know that we're that would be effective way moving forward to communicate. Then on the regarding the conservation and budgeting and the funding aspect of it, I think we do need to have clarity on the purveyors' roles, the county's roles. You know, it keeps coming up, and you know, somehow we need to bring that before the board and really define that and understand that, because I have some uncertainties myself of where those lie, and we're working through Golden State's working through its budget process right now, and I need to know what lies ahead. So we need to bring that back to the board and really understand that and answer some of the questions in public comment. That is about my two comments. I think everything else was addressed in yours. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think just to follow up on the second item you raised, that's something that Rob and I have been talking about. We do want to bring that back as soon as possible, but there is obviously a multitude of prongs attached, for lack of a better term. So I think what we're probably going to end up doing is, rather than bring it back in the broad brush approach with all those items that we talked about last meeting, separate it out and bring in first the ones that are relatively easy to do, and then the ones that may take more time or more research or you know, grant applications or whatever, bring those separately. So probably what we're looking at is coming back with a reduced list, hopefully either in June or July. That's the goal.
Okay.
Agreed. Certainly shooting for June. I'd like to advance
this
right away.
Well, I was buying you some time.
Yeah, I know you are kind.
I know we talked about June, but I just wanted to give you outside there.
Yeah. And if I might, Mr. Chairman, as to the first item, appreciate staff's effort to get that postcard out. With the wastewater project, we found that direct mail was a very effective way. Mm-hmm. So our public works team does track how many permits apply to have septic repurposing of one sort or another, at least clean and close. The other thing is, in terms of a controlled experiment, it's going to be hard to tell, because we are now very close to starting phase two of hookups. We're going to be having town hall meetings, and we always, you know, we have since the beginning pitched septic repurposing in that. So I think it's going to become a growing trend. I think you may know the statistic that about 22% of permits for lateral connections have included septic repurposing, which, based on staff's initial expectation of it, is great, doing really well on it. So that's headed in the right direction for sure.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Yeah, and let me just piggyback on that, because I'm getting ready to connect in phase two. And I can, in the contractors that I've talked to or my neighbors have talked to, I can definitely see that they have a better understanding of repurposing now than they did a month or two ago. So I think that at least the contractors are being brought up to speed to the value of repurposing, which I think is really, really important. So it's not just education of the public, but as we talked about last time, it's education of the contractors too. So.
Very good.
Okay, so with that, then we'll take a motion.
There's a motion and a second on the floor. So.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay. With that, then we'll go to Rob to, item 7A, which is the draft 2015 annual report.
Thank you. We brought a PowerPoint presentation to walk through some of the key figures and conclusions in the report. Just a few introductory comments. This report did get prepared on an abbreviated schedule because we were striving to meet our court mandated date by the end of June. So we asked for this draft so we could bring it forward today, at least all the technical information, and then bring the complete draft for approval at your June meeting, with the intent of getting it to the court by the end of June. That being said, it is a draft, and it looks like it's a very complete set of technical report and tables and charts, but we did see a few items that we're going to be addressing with the consultant. Specifically, some of the nitrate tables, there was a few data errors in translating those between the raw data and the nitrate metric, so we've got some corrections that we're providing to Cleith Harris on that, and there'll be some other comments that come through as the various staffs dive into the detail in the report. So do consider it a draft. So in walking through some of the key conclusions in the report, it's important that we understand the upper aquifer and lower aquifer monitoring that's going on. Here you see a summary of the various monitoring wells. Some of them are for the purpose of monitoring water levels. Others are for water quality, but you can see the spatial variation there. It is a fairly complete monitoring set. In the lower aquifer, you can see that we've got, again, fairly extensive monitoring. We do have some data gaps, specifically the need for a well in Cuesta by the Sea, which we were not able to complete in 2005 because of a collapsed borehole. But we do intend to bring that forward in terms of funding when we go after community-wide funding to fill that gap and make sure we have a well in Cuesta by the Sea. But that's the lower aquifer monitoring well network. You've all seen this basin cross-section, but for those who may be in the audience who haven't, here you go. We do have a number of zones, which we've designated by letter. Zones A and B, we're calling perched zones that are in the Baywood area. They comprise a portion of Baywood. Those aren't for the productive zones for pumping, for groundwater production. And then we have zone C, which we call our upper aquifer, and then a thick clay. And then we have our lower aquifer zones, zones D and E, and then bedrock below that. Over on the right, you see in a pale yellow the creek alluvium, which is a means of communicating with the lower aquifer, and that's one of the areas where the lower aquifer is recharged. And then on the far right hand of that cross-section, you see the agricultural area, which does have access to the lower aquifer, but it's on the edge of it as that aquifer comes up to the surface. One thing that we've probably never talked about as a community is hexavalent chromium. There was a recent change in the maximum contaminant level that a purveyor can have in their water supply wells to be able to deliver water to customers with hexavalent chromium. The new level is 10 parts per billion. And when that new law came down, many purveyors in California began to have challenges because existing wells met the old requirement but not the new requirement. The district is one of those impacted parties. Our Third Street well, which is, I believe, our oldest well that's still operating, does have a level slightly above the maximum. We're at around 11, and the maximum is 10. But we thought it'd be important just so the community understands the spread of hexavalent chromium. It occurs in both the upper and lower aquifers, and it does crop up at various areas and is not tied to any one single area. So I know Golden State's watching those levels as well as the district, but it is one of those things that here in an annual report format, we've never had combined information, and now we do. We can look for trends, track this year over year, and see if there's any evidence of a plume or some specific impact. It is both naturally occurring and man-made, so it's very difficult to nail down what the source of this is, especially since it occurs in both aquifer zones, but it's something that we'll be watching very carefully as a committee. One of the things that Cleith Harris did is they came up with a moving average of groundwater production. This doesn't necessarily reflect the very, very low production that we saw last year, because it is a moving average, as you can see from the date ranges at the bottom. And you can see how, you know, our production peaked there in the 80s and 90s and has dropped off significantly. I think this is a very interesting slide because it speaks to the production in our western area with the lower aquifer shown in the pale green. And you can see the sharp decrease in our production from the westerly side of the basin from the 80s and 90s. This chart never ceases to confuse people. Some of you are familiar with it. I'll make my best attempt. This is called the cumulative departure from the mean rainfall. And so what that means is that it's a measure of how annual rainfall compares to average rainfall over time. When the chart is heading in an upward direction, when there's an upward trend, that means we're in wetter years, generally. And the steeper it is, the wetter those years are. When it's in a downward decline, that means we're in dry years. The steeper the decline, the drier it is. So you can see that in the middle of the 2000s, we were enjoying a wet period there and a period of average rainfall. And then we saw a very steep decline, as everybody knows. This is a report that's applicable through 2015. We tried to resist the temptation to forecast through 2016, which is frustrating for folks, but we keep the snapshot in 2015. So obviously we did have some rainfall in this last winter, but that'll be reflected in next year's report. So what this says is that we're back at zero, which when you look at a 20 or so year history, actually 40-year history, we are at about par when you look over those 40 years, but we are in an intense and sharp decline because of the drought. Aquifer contours. We call this interpretation of data. Contours are a very helpful way of depicting the average water elevation above mean sea level within our various aquifer zones. If you're not used to looking at these, don't let this throw you. But if you look at the numbers within those contours, this is for the perched zone that occurs primarily in Baywood. Again, we don't produce from this zone, but this reflects often the first water that you would hit if you were to drill a well. And so when you look at the elevations above sea level, you see these really high elevations of 50 plus all the way up in north of 100, and that's because this is sitting on top of a shallow clay in that area of the community. So when you look to recharge groundwater, say from repurposed leach fields, it's a bit challenging in those perched zones because water tends to sit on that clay. So that's the perched zone. Of more interest are the upper and lower aquifer contours, and it's a little difficult to tell at this distance. But you can see that at the coast, we have some fairly low water elevations in our upper aquifer. So this is one of the things that in our adaptive management program, we're going to look very carefully to make sure that we have adequate height of water in our shallow wells as well as our deep to be protective of seawater intrusion. So right now you can see that the contours go from high numbers to low numbers at the coast, and that's generally what you want, which means water is continually flowing out to the coast, keeping seawater at bay in our shallow aquifer. But this, of course, is something to watch. The district is not currently producing from its Third Street well because of hex chromium, but we are watching water levels in that well if we ever do begin to produce from it again, because we are seeing drought-related effects. This is for spring of 2015. Now, when you look at fall, I'll just flip back and forth briefly. There's fall, there's spring, and there's fall again. Conclusion, it's very similar between spring and fall. At the coast, you see a 5-foot contour. That means when we measure the actual water level in our upper aquifer wells at the coast, we're about 5 feet above mean sea level with those water levels in the fall, which is generally the most conservative time to look at because you've had a whole summer of production with very little rainfall. So in this particular year, spring and fall were very comparable in the upper aquifer. Switching to the lower aquifer, you can see here, and maybe I can point to it if I can do that. I got a mouse. This line here is 5 feet below sea level, and this line here is at sea level, and this is 10 foot below sea level. So what that means is that seawater, which has a higher pressure out here, is still being encouraged to come into the community because of the way these contours are set up. It allows what's called a landward gradient, to use some mumbo-jumbo. But we do have over in the east side of the community where we're looking to produce additional lower aquifer water, you can see that water levels are still relatively high over here in the ag areas. But we are looking at the groundwater depressions that have been created by our pumping over the years. And of course, we're looking to fill those in and have those be protective of seawater intrusion. I'm just going to flip back and forth between spring and fall briefly so you can see the difference as you go 6 months. You can see water levels drop in general about 5 feet between spring, there's spring, and fall. Spring and fall. So as expected, fall is somewhat worse than spring. We used to do this maybe once every 5 years, maybe even less often. Now we have a tool to do it every year, and so we'll be able to trend these contours, see how they're going to be impacted by our measures, hopefully in a very positive manner, and hopefully we'll see some of these pumping depressions fill back in. Water level hydrographs are a way of looking at historical levels over time, and these levels are plotted from the 80s over on the left-hand side all the way to current. And this is our upper aquifer. So some of the conclusions that you can come to by looking at this, we're clearly seeing in some wells an overall decline in the upper aquifer, which is based on producing more water from it. We'll be watching that carefully as we look to see a balance there. As you produce more water from an aquifer, it induces more recharge. And so we should see those stabilize. If not, that will be one of our adaptive management measures. And some of those wells in the purple and the pale yellow have been relatively constant over the years, generally reflecting the western side of the upper aquifer and the central. This is a very important graph and one that we'll do well to present each time. And it shows the hydrograph of the lower aquifer. And those of you who've been looking at well levels for a long time in Los Osos will be cautiously optimistic because we show a very clear trend of water level recovery in our key lower aquifer wells, based primarily on water conservation that's occurred in the community since 2010. So you look at 2010, you look at water levels, and you can see a clear trend of increasing levels, which is a good sign. It doesn't imply that we're out of the woods by any stretch, because when I show you the metrics of what we're trying to shoot for, you can see that this is just a good start that says that, yes, we are on the right path, but we still need to implement everything that we've talked about in the basin plan. This is a snapshot that shows where the seawater front was in 2015. And there, with my cursor, you can see the dashed red line is where we're saying is the current 250 milligram per liter chloride level. Has not yet hit our Palisades well. But at least when we looked at it as a snapshot in time in 2015, we still felt like seawater was moving inland at approximately 200 feet per year. And is still a primary concern. One of the new factors that we have in the annual report is a calculation of groundwater in storage and how that's compared between 2005 and 10 years later in spring 2015. And this is something we'll provide in each annual report. And so what this means is that there has been a decline in storage based on seawater intrusion occurring and based on water levels dropping. and you can see the quantities there in this table. The one reason I wanted to bring this up, because this is a fairly highly technical table, I wanted to encourage all the people listening to not get out your calculator, look at how much fresh water is sitting in storage, and divide. So don't do that, because it doesn't work that way. This is not a reservoir that you can just pump from and it'll go to zero. As you pump too much, yes, you'll lose storage, but you'll also be inducing more seawater intrusion. So this was an encouragement not to divide. We do report on the basin metrics, which we will every year, and wanted to give some overview of that. The basin yield metric, which I'll try to make simple here, is simply a comparison of what we're producing to what we can produce times 100. So it's like a percentage. If we're sitting at 100%, which we're calling 100 with this metric, it means we are just producing every drop that we can produce, and we're not really in a safe zone. We're right on the edge of safety. Our goal as a committee and our goal in the basin plan is 80. That means we want to produce 80% of what we theoretically could based on what the model says we can produce. And so that's our stated goal, and that's where we're moving. In 2014, because of a drop in production and water conservation, the basin yield metric dropped below 100 for the first time since 1978. So that harmonizes with the fact the water levels are recovering. And so that's not a completely safe place to be. We don't want to be at 100. We want to be well low below that to 80. And then last year, again, because of a drop in production, we dropped below 90 and hit 89. So if we can then implement some basin plan projects, implement continued water conservation, we do feel that hitting it from both directions, adequate supply, increased supply, increased water efficiency, not so much compromise of lifestyle, but water efficiency, then when we meet in the middle, we'll be well below 80, well below 80, and do expect to recover the basin. So this is where we were in 2015. This chart shows the two key physical measures of seawater intrusion potential and seawater intrusion itself. In the blue, you see a measurement of water levels over time. And, of course, this doesn't include 2016 data. This is just through 2015 and reflects a long dry period. But what you can see is a clear trend in the blue line heading towards higher water levels. But so as not to produce complacency, the bar is up here. That's where we want to be for water levels, 8 feet above mean sea level on average throughout our metric wells. And so the trend is there, but the results are not yet there. And as we reach that, we do expect to see chlorides respond. We did have there in the red our chloride metric plotted, and where we would like to be is where that horizontal line is at 100 milligrams per liter, which we're up over 180 now. We did see last fall a little inflection in that chloride level as we had a slight drop. We were very careful to explain to people not to take that too far, but watch it carefully over the next number of monitoring cycles. But we project our chloride metric, consistent with having water levels that are not yet protective, that chloride metric would continue to increase. I will talk about the April 2016 results here in a little bit, just so you can have some context of what's happened more recently. This nitrate metric does need to be adjusted based on that data table issue, so we'll bring that back next time. But suffice it to say that nitrate levels are above the maximum contaminant level in these wells that we're measuring. Remember, this is not a nitrate metric that is an average of all the nitrate values. There are some upper aquifer wells that are below the maximum contaminant level. We chose the wells that were the most sensitive to nitrate so that we could see a reversing trend based on the wastewater project doing its job. So there are some important next steps here in this process before I get to the 2016 data. The first is there's a Chapter 10 that's a placeholder, and over the next number of weeks and for our next meeting, staff's going to be working through a conceptual adaptive management program for the basin. We don't think we'll necessarily have all the metrics quantified and nailed down by next meeting, but what we'll do is put a framework in place to say, you know, in July, August, we'll bring this information, in August, September, this, because we want to make sure there's adequate time for this committee to deliberate in public about what we're going to do if, say, we have upper aquifer water levels that are dropping, or we're not hitting our goals for lower aquifer results. All these critical items we want to spend time vetting here in public, so staff will bring back a framework for what you're going to see, even things like considering a discussion of development and those sorts of things. We want to hit those over the next number of months, and the framework will come back to you next meeting in Chapter 10. We also will want to provide an update on the status of the basin plan projects and programs, and we'll do that for each of the projects that are listed in the basin plan, as well as any new projects that are in the works. And so we'll be working as staff to include that in Chapter 10, and then ultimately adopt the annual report, hopefully at your next meeting, or we'll have to consider a special meeting, and then provide that to the court by the end of June. Okay, early results from the April 2016 seawater intrusion monitoring event. We did have one well, which was a resample, so we couldn't fully calculate the chloride metric, but we had some interesting results. Of course, we had some of our lowest production in many decades, and we did see an aquifer response to that. We're not calling this a wholesale reversal of seawater intrusion. We're saying it's an aquifer response. It is encouraging. Two of the wells that are the most sensitive to the nitrate front include Rosina Well, which we had a 10% drop in chlorides from 329 to 299, kind of back to 2014 level. That's why I'm encouraging you not to make too much of this, because if you want to go back to 2010 levels, you got to get much lower. But we did see a little relaxation of chlorides. The central area did not show any notable changes. So our 8th Street and 10th Street wells as a district stayed pretty much where they are. Our Palisades well also showed a slight drop, again, an aquifer response, which is encouraging, around that 10% range. So we were worried that we would see an increase in Palisades, denoting the front continuing to hit us there. So cautiously optimistic there. Of course, we have to get through a summer where production tends to be a little higher, where there's outdoor irrigation, and then face a fall reading as well. And when we have that last data point back, we'll bring that in a future executive director's report. And I'd be happy to answer any questions from the committee or the public.
Yeah, well, Bruce, you have some questions?
Well, just
we have questions and then public comment, then we'll bring it back for just discussion.
Looking forward to your Chapter 10 on adaptive management, we're really at the point of setting up the framework, but it doesn't seem at this point that we have a kind of track record that suggests we would be changing the basin management plan, or am I missing something there?
I think where we want to bolster the basin management plan is not on the projects. I think those are consistent with where we want to go. I think it's in looking at things like the upper aquifer, other threats to the basin, maybe it's Chrome 6 or something else, that we didn't have the okay. You know, the information to do that at the time of the basin plan. Now we do.
Okay, perfect.
Thank you. Question before? Yes.
Yes. You answered some of my questions in the beginning, so but the document that you sent to us is titled Groundwater Monitoring Plan, and I notice on the slide here you just called it Annual Plan. And so I thought there's maybe two plans out there. But that they're both the same part of the same thing.
Yeah.
So you, but there's Chapter 10 is going to be more to focus on what we are actually doing as the committee. I think that's very important because it's going to be a public document, and to get the community support, we really have to show that we are doing something and making progress. I would encourage that we maybe think of doing some kind of a summary up front because it's a very technical report, and a lot of people aren't going to be able to get very far into it before they give up in frustration. And so if we had some kind of a summary of what we have accomplished and what we are currently working on would be very helpful. And then I have a question to you, Rob. I think there's a confusion in well UA4, upper aquifer well 4. There's two wells. One is S&T's number one well, and then there's a test well on the corner of Del Norte and Howard. And both of them referred to it as, so I'd like that clarified because I don't think they used our well number one for measurements. I was not aware of it if they had.
Okay, we'll get that clarified with the consultant.
Thank you.
Mark, any questions?
Yeah, this is a great report. Very informative, a lot of information there. I agree with the summary, just to kind of let people understand the context of it a little easier. But one of the things you mentioned about the basin management, some of the projects, I think it would be kind of important to tie those projects in and have a little more clarity of how they fit in, just because it'll show that our plan is working and how we tie this into some of the progress that we make. So it was just something that caught my attention. The basin boundary that we're using, this is the modified boundary, the proposed modified boundary, is that correct?
Should be. Yeah, I didn't compare them carefully. Should be.
Okay, so that's just one thing that caught my attention. One of the wells in the deep aquifer is outside of that boundary. I don't know if that'll help or hinder if we're going through the review process of the, if you look at the...
LA 36.
Yeah,
LA 36. I noticed that too, yeah.
So I just wanted to point that out.
We'll point that out.
And then the nitrates, I think you addressed that. You're going to be looking at that. And the citations, I know you list all the citations in the front, but if we're looking at specific data, it might be helpful to put that citation there so somebody could easily reference the where the data came from and go back to it. So I think some of the, it's all listed in the front, but as we're going through it, it's hard to go back and forth and find out where that's at.
Okay.
And I think that the rest of them you answered, you know, we do plan on providing a few more comments, probably in a written form from our technical group. So you can expect to see those. But overall, great job. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? You have any other responses before we go to public comment?
No, I've noted those.
Okay, I think the executive summary was a very, very good suggestion.
I think that'd be good.
Okay, we'll go to public comment then on this item.
Keith Weimer, Los Osos Sustainability Group. Rob, could you go back to the just where the wells are shown? We'd start with the upper aquifer. I just wanted to point out that these are our data points right here, and the ones with the pluses are yet to be, you know, to come online. If we're talking about monitoring seawater intrusion in the upper aquifer, we just have three wells that are actually chloride wells. And just one well sitting out there, UA5, that's going to be a first-line well for seawater intrusion. So it looks to me like there's a big, lack of wells to monitor seawater intrusion in the upper aquifer. I also wanted to point out that those two pluses off to the right in the central area, or three pluses, again, those are recommended wells, but 14 and 15 are private wells as well as those others, and there's no access to private wells at this point. So I don't know where we're getting the contours on these things, to be honest. But let's go to the lower aquifer. I'll start off with the private well issue. From LA 23 through 30, and then also 32, so virtually all the wells over in this area are private wells, and there's no data on those from those wells right now, apparently. So no wonder there's a recommendation for you know, going to the private well people and trying to get some data. But obviously, if you can't get that data, you're going to have mandatory monitoring, because otherwise you don't have the data that you need for that part of the aquifer. Also, look out to the ocean side, still big gaps in seawater intrusion monitoring. There's no well water level blue dots over there near LA 12 and LA 11. And we have that one orange dot that's going to be, you know, added. In fact, I thought the county was going to pay for that up front. But there still seems to be a lot of gaps there. And I know Gus Yates was saying that there needs to be more monitoring in there. So just wanted to point that out. There's some major gaps still, largely as a result of private wells, not having access to private wells. If we can go to the contour map just a minute, and lower aquifer, we had those deep depressions. So that's the spring, this is the fall. You have water levels here in the central area that are 15 feet below sea level, and we're shooting for, 8 feet above mean sea level? So, and then you have, like a zero sea level, right at sea level, all the way out into the bay. And we're shooting for 8 feet above. So technically, that's, as Rob said, that's inviting seawater intrusion. And we have a lot of work to do to get that upper aquifer up there. And again, measuring those water levels and the chloride levels in that area is critical. So we need more monitoring wells along there. I also want to point out that moving wells inland, could allow that the groundwater levels to come up ocean, on the ocean side, and create that freshwater barrier. So that allows more pumping, theoretically, but you're still getting way below sea level on the inland areas, and that doesn't seem like to me to be a good policy. That there should be some objectives and some metrics, not only for seawater intrusion on the ocean side, but metrics for water levels and so on in the inland areas, so we're not completely depleting it down to dangerous levels. Let's see.
Okay, Keith. Keith, your 3 minutes are up. What I would suggest is, I'll give you just, you can finish up, but I would suggest you submit these comments in writing so that Rob has them and that we all have them, if you could.
I would. Could I just hit one or two more points? Thank you. I wanted to point out something that I've noticed for a while, but I'll point this out in my notes. But there's a distortion in the way that the cross section is presented. The upper aquifer is presented as almost half of the remaining freshwater basin, but actually it's presented as almost equal, the upper aquifer almost equal to the lower aquifer, but actually it's only 1/4. So there should be a revision in the way that's presented. And then I just wanted to hit one more thing, and that is that the seawater intrusion line now, and you showed it, it's just the lines where the seawater intrusion is. If we could look at that just a minute, I'll explain some. Those are the data points for measuring where that bulge is. And really, again, there are not very many data points there. And also, it's being measured differently now. Instead of where the toe is, in 2015 it was changed. So I'm not sure why that was. But it doesn't show the full extent of where that seawater intrusion is. I'm wondering why that was changed, and whether it's not a good idea to show where the toe is, because that also has an influence. There could be some upconing through wells. So that would be worthwhile, it seems to me.
All right. Thank you, Keith. And again, the committee would appreciate if you get the technical comments in writing, please.
Lou Twornotsky, Los Osos. Rob, I have a couple questions. And what the presentation has been focused on, as I understand it, here's a whole bunch of outcome or dependent variables, which are of great interest and well presented. And then if one wants to sort of change a system, you start inserting things. And it strikes me that the biggest thing we've inserted in the last year is we're using less water. The other thing, we're in the process of a big independent variable, if you will, is, well, now we're getting hooked up to the sewer system over the next year or a little bit beyond that. Then there's a whole program of things we could do in the future if we get the money and we make careful choices. I guess I'm trying to figure out how you're going to sort this all out. Hopefully they're going to have wonderful, positive outcomes. And how you're going to sort it out in ways that make methodological or statistical credence. You may not be able to.
Thank you. And okay. Yeah. Richard?
Rob, can you put up the nitrate? That one, yeah. Could you explain the rise this last year in conjunction with the increased rainfall from last year, the effects of flushing, we've talked about that before. And there has been some progress, but there's also been a proportionally in a greater proportional increase in water conservation over the last 5 years than a normal community due to the drought, due to the water conservation program, due to the wastewater project, those things. Could you touch on the impact of, say, another 7-inch rain year this upcoming year? Because there are some reports out there, and I know meteorologists are all over the place, but they're saying this next year might be a La Nina, and we may, you know, be way below what we were this year and back to the averages for the last 3 years. But that is startling, the increase. And if you could tie those. Yeah, I think you know where I'm coming from. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Any other? Oops, yes. Jeff?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Jeff Edwards, and I won't need any slides for my comments, Rob. I'm on balance, I'm encouraged by the report and the results. It appears our basin is responding favorably to the conservation that's been implemented in the community. Unfortunately, this conservation has bought us some time, but not very much. So I think time is still our enemy, and it's still something we need to keep at the forefront of our discussion. You heard that our current demand, including agriculture, is about 2,170 acre feet per year. And our safe yield, our estimated safe yield, is 2,450 acre feet per year. So at a basin yield metric of 89, we're moving in the right direction. My concern is that we look at the basin plan, and the maximum yield provided for in the basin plan is about 3,500 acre feet. This seems to be substantially more than this community will ever need. By my calculations, including additional water conservation and some additional development, we may never need more than what we're using right now at about, let's call it 2,200 acre feet. So my main message is let's recalibrate our implementation funding for the basin plan. I don't think we're going to be anywhere near $30 or $40 million to implement this plan. We don't need 3,500 acre feet of water. My estimate is more like $15 million for all the programs that will achieve what we need to. Principally, programs A and C. That's $10 million. If we add the creek discharge project to that, $3, $4 million, we're starting to get up to the $15 million that I'm quoting. So I think we need to scale the solution to the problem. We are not the Paso Robles groundwater basin. Their safe yield's 100,000 acre feet a year. We're 2.5% of that. So my challenge to this group is that given that time is our enemy, I challenge this group to get a new well online in the central zone within the next 18 months. That's my challenge to you. If we can do that one well in combination with additional water conservation and perhaps the creek discharge, I think we've been able to sort this problem out. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Okay, seeing none, we'll close public comment and bring it back. Rob, if you could answer the questions, and then we'll have discussion.
Sure, thank you very much. One thing for Keith's comments, he was talking about the private wells. We do have a countywide well monitoring program that does include many private wells with a careful confidentiality agreement that the county negotiates with each and every property owner, and there's trust that's been built up over time. So we do get water levels from many private wells. To get water quality from those, to equip them with transducers is more challenging. But we do get water levels from many of them. If it's marked with a plus and we don't have it today, that's something that we'd need to understand and pursue. Keith also mentioned the benefits of potentially showing in some fashion the location of the toe. We used to do that in cross-section. I'll think about that because I think that does have some merit. So you can understand that the shallower you are, the less seawater intrusion you tend to have. So in the deeper zones, it tends to come in farther. So I think that's worth considering. Lou talked about independent and dependent variables. I think our current approach is to use a simplified set of metrics and trend lines, not wanting to put equations on those dependent and independent variables for fear that our equations will be forever second-guessed, but to simply show that we are moving with the appropriate trend and to make the targets very clear for each trend line, I think is what we're trying to do to understand the effects of the independent variables. Richard mentioned this slide. I wish it was something more interesting to talk about. I think it was a transposition in the table. This is one of the things that we're getting back to the consultant. We believe the actual value is closer to 20. And we'll have that corrected slide next time. But we did notice that there seemed to be an issue with the way the metric was calculated. We would expect discharges of nitrate to be more concentrated because of water conservation, but you'd have the same mass, the same number of pounds of nitrate, because that's a constant through our biological processes. And then Jeff talked about funding levels, but I think that was more a comment than a question. So concludes my response.
Okay. So if I understand this, we're just looking for some direction to staff. We've given you some already.
You've
got
some
good comments from the public. So, Mark, why don't we start with you if you have any other further direction you'd like to give?
Well, I think we have, and I think coming back, you know, looking at the comments in the report, coming back to that, I think the report will be complete at that point. So I really don't have anything to add as far as direction, just what we commented on at this point.
Great. If there are written comments, if they could be to us maybe by the end of next week or Monday of the following week, that would give us time to incorporate.
Okay, that'll be good.
Not only from the committee members, but from the public also.
Correct.
Yeah. Right. So,
Bill, do you have anything?
My comment would be picking up on Mr. Edwards' comments. He did have a point there that if indeed, I think our technical staff has to determine that, but if indeed we're shooting for a much greater capacity than we will need with build out, then we should take that into account.
Bruce? You know, I have noted for a long while on a number of them the sparsity of data and the beautiful contours that geologists love to create from them. But that's my difference of opinion as a geophysicist, and I've had many an interesting conversation over the years. I think that it, I didn't exactly see it in the report, but it might be well to use the existing data network, the sparsity of the data network, as a prompt for the increase in the monitoring wells that we know we need. I think that in terms of our ability to do precise adaptive management, more information is going to be necessary.
Agreed.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think also the fact that now we're going to start doing regular monitoring, which we weren't doing for an extended period of time, will help us with our modeling and with our projections to see how we may actually impact the basin. So I think that's going to be helpful. I think I would agree with primarily two of Mark's comments. I think having some references integrated into the document rather than having them all at the end, I think would be helpful, because that way people then, I don't want to say they'll have more incentive, but they'll have more accessibility to those documents, I think, by having the immediate reference there. And then I think we're all in agreement that an executive summary up front would be very, very helpful to give people an overview of what's involved in the report. So,
very good.
Any other comments? Okay, seeing none, then we'll finish this item.
Very helpful. Thank you.
Then we'll bring up the item we've been discussing every meeting. So,
So staff doesn't have an extensive presentation on this particular item.
That would be 7B.
That would be 7B.
Yes. Consider the video recording of our meeting. So.
Right. We did discuss it briefly at the end of the last meeting. And,
yeah, and I had left by that time.
You had. So we wanted to bring it back as a specifically agendized item. As has been said in previous discussions, it does appear that our budget will have some leftover in the area of facility rental that would cover the additional cost of video services, and then staff would be happy to implement whatever the committee jointly comes up with.
I did have one question though, as far as the accessibility of this, getting this on channel 20 or whatever. Has anybody checked into whether we could do that or not? Because that's not under this committee's control.
I don't have that information. I presume that we could. I'd be very surprised if we couldn't find a way to do that.
That's something we need to confirm with them if we do decide to go that route. Mm-hmm. So if that was the route we decided, I think we'd have to make it contingent upon the fact that that was something that was doable. I'm with you. I assume it is, but we'd actually need confirmation that it is. Any other questions?
So I just wanted a little clarity on the video, regarding whether it's on cable or online streaming. It'll be available on both of those avenues.
Well, it will be available online streaming for sure. Just a question of whether we could play it on channel 20 or some publicly accessible channel rather than just doing it on the internet.
Right.
Right. We believe we can play it on cable, but we need that positive confirmation.
The videotaping, as long as it'll increase the community's availability to what's happening in the committee here and what the efforts we're making, I think Golden State would support that.
So, well, we got to take public comment here, Bill, unless you have a question.
Oh, that's no question.
Okay, so let's take public comment on this item. I think we could maybe make this a little brief because I know we've heard it from multiple times. So if you just want to get up and say you're repeating your comments from the previous meetings, that would be helpful.
Or not comment.
Or not comment, right?
I'm repeating my comments. I'm in favor of it. I think it's going to help get this thing funded because I think actually some pretty positive things happen in here. So thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to see changes, though, and I'm going to bring those up at an open call.
Patrick McGibney. I think also if we had it videotaped, we wouldn't have to worry so much about the minutes being so accurate. So I think that would be the minutes right there pretty well.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Okay. Seeing none, we'll close public comment and we'll bring it back to the board, or pardon me, the committee. Now, Bill, it's your turn.
Okay, my turn. Of course, I was initially against this, but I've changed my mind. I really think we should do that. There's two reasons. One, of course, is what we are really trying to sell the public in advance of any 218 vote, and so it's important that they have our side of all stories. And with the technical content of what we're trying to do, it can be very easy for misinterpretation if it just goes word of mouth from place to place. And in our for the wastewater project, when we had the advisory council, we did televise it, and I had many favorable comments back from people who don't come to meetings at all, but did get to see it, and I think it gives us more of a reality to the people that we're going to try to ask money from.
Thank you. Bruce?
Well, I'm easy either way on this. I'm not persuaded that videotaping is going to reach a large population, and, you know, I've been attending public meetings in Los Osos for most of 10 years now, and I've found that when a video camera is on, you tend to attract folks that like to play to the camera, and that tends to make the meetings longer, tends to make them less productive. You know, I think there's an equally good case to be made that these funds put into a good regular direct mail piece and town hall meetings at appropriate times when we've got information to contribute. We've seen that work in the wastewater project. Like I say, if it's the desire of the majority of my colleagues to do that, I'm happy to go along with it.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, and I haven't gotten the vote on this issue because it was already decided by the time my name was called. But I've been undecided on this, quite frankly, and because in my mind, I agree with what Bruce just said. It's going to put a lot of more burden on me as the chair to make sure that the meeting runs smoothly and that we're not distracted by people that are just trying to get TV time, for lack of a better term. So. But I do also agree, having served on the Technical Advisory Committee, which you chaired, Bill, and I thought you did an excellent job, I think that we did get a lot of comments back from the people that weren't really engaged, but they were watching the video and otherwise really would have had no idea what we were doing. So I thought, you know, we did get a lot of valid comments from that. So I think that, you know, I'm going to go along with it, just with the proviso that, again, we have to find out if we can put it on Channel 20 and how that would work. But secondly, if our meetings do start to get unruly because of this, I want to revisit the issue. So we'll take a motion. We already had public comment.
I'll make the motion that we begin video recording of our meetings. And also, dependent on A, that we can get it on one of the public television channels, and B, that we leave open the ability that if it becomes destructive or
counterproductive,
we again bring it up to whether we want to continue it.
I second that.
Okay.
Question on the motion. It is a conditional that if it can't get on whatever public access channel, then we don't do it?
No, I thought my feeling was we just want to check that. Well, you would still stream it on the internet. It just,
right, yeah.
Okay, so that's not really a
condition. No, it's not a, right, yeah.
Just something we want to look into, see whether it's.
And I think if it gets unruly, the ability to back off of it becomes actually less likely. Maybe you want to make it for a fixed period and we'll revisit it, see how it goes.
It's up to you guys.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that would accomplish, but I would not be opposed to it if we.
I'll go either way. I just point out the issues here.
I'll amend that, and that we do that, and we bring it back to the committee for decision whether we continue it, say by our December meeting. Let's give it the rest of the year.
Second.
You're fine with that?
Yep.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? Okay, Rob. We'll take a roll call.
Great. Director Garfinkel.
Yes.
Director Zimmer.
Yes.
Director Gibson.
Yes.
Chairperson Wilhelmsky.
Yes. Okay, thank you. I do know that Bruce has to leave early, so. Yeah, so so let's go to the last item on our agenda, which is public comments on the item that were not appearing on the agenda. So.
My name is Keith Weimer.
Could I just, Keith, before I start your time here, if we could, if you have extended comments or detailed comments or technical comments, getting those in writing always helps to for the committee and for Rob. And we do have a three-minute time frame here, so I'll start it now.
Okay. Sustainability group, but I'm the chair of the local Sierra Club chapter of the Water Committee. And I have not been able to, or we haven't been able to finalize our position paper on what we will support yet, but I'm going to give you just a very general overview of what you're likely to see. And it does tie in with some of the comments earlier and the comments that were focused on summarizing what the basin plan will do and more or less focusing on action steps. For one, we'd like to see a clear definition of basin sustainability, the conditions that must exist for the public to be sure the basin is sustainable for the existing population. And second, a clear objective, specific measurable objective to achieve that sustainable condition, and sub-objectives and milestones that would get us there. For instance, currently there's a sustainable yield that allows further seawater intrusion. There are entitlement pools that allow you to exceed that sustainable yield. And then there's a recommended 20% below sustainable yield. Really, the plan's going in three different directions there. So in your response to the Sierra Club, you state that your objective is to reverse seawater intrusion using the yield metric of 80. We'd like to see that just made the objective and have one clear objective and then go for that. I think you'll need to be sure also that the public is able to trust the decision-making process, including modeling, metrics, and reports. And for that to happen, they must be understandable, focused on objectives. They must be transparent about assumptions and uncertainties. In every report, there should be an analysis of uncertainties. The basin plan makes it clear that accurate production data is a bottom line for protection of the basin. There may be some success with voluntary reporting by private well owners, but there should be a timeline on how long that process is going to be put into effect before there's mandatory reporting. And it will also likely require some other mandatory measures like conservation, recycled water use, and so on. The most cost-effective seawater intrusion mitigation programs must be completely maximized, and we've already talked about what those are, but we would like to add stormwater capture and recharge. It's a very inexpensive water source compared to desalination or importing water. It may not be a large source of supplemental water, but it is a significant source and it does have multiple benefits. And finally, the assessment must be minimal. And I even picked the figure of $15 million here. It's kind of interesting. I think that if there is, it's determined that that people in the wastewater district are paying through the wastewater assessment for some benefits that are accruing to people outside of the wastewater district, that can be compensated for in a smaller assessment. It doesn't need to be, you know, like everything gets totally refinanced. So thank you. We will turn in something that
thank you.
Is more formal.
Thank you, Keith. Any other? Richard?
I really have a problem understanding why the county has to always control the message or influence the message when it comes to this community. Don't need detailed minutes. Mr. Gibson has fought from the beginning on videotaping these meetings. Now he's, oh, I can go either way, I'm amenable. That's not even close to what happened in the background of trying to stop these meetings from being telecast. Why do you not want this community, who's paying an exorbitant amount of money for a wastewater project and for projects to save the basin on the water side, to have every bit of information possible? PowerPoint at the last meeting should have been on channel 20. This one should be on channel 20. You're going to ask these people for another vote. There's people in this community that have heard just in the background about what's going on, you know, and oh, there's going to be a two. They don't even care what it's for. The flat-out statements that are coming from people on the streets in this community, not voting for another tax for Los Osos, not doing it. You got an uphill climb. And the threat of Sigma and all that, if that's the way you're going to go, you're going to get defeated. You have to bring this community into the process. I'm so tired of the county trying to control the message all the time. Just let it play out and let the community make their decision. Give them every opportunity to get the facts, get the presentations. Mr. Gibson yesterday at the Board of Supervisors meeting told Mr. Meacham that we're well on our way to developing the 218 process and get a vote passed. Where has that been on the agenda? When are we going to get an update on how that process is proceeding? That needs to be on an upcoming agenda. When the vote's going to be out there, how much you've spent, what the parameters are going to be. This community doesn't have a whole lot of money left. If you don't do this right, you're not going to pass it, because you got to get 66.66%. That's a hard hill to climb.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Okay. We'll close public comment. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see you.
Lou Tornatsky. I am a member of the CSD, but I'm speaking as a private citizen. One of the things that sort of bothers me, and it's, I guess I would convey a warning to the group, whenever we're at the brink of a step to invest in something, it will be some piece of the basin plan, the assumption is that we're going to go back to the ratepayers to pay for that. Everything that we do from here on out, there needs to be an energetic effort to find grant funding. That's always bypassed because a lot of the people in the room aren't familiar with doing that. We have to do that. This community has been suffering a long time, and we need to make at least the best effort to try to get them off the hook a little bit for the cost of all the things that are going to happen that are going to be worthwhile and do a lot of good things.
Okay, any other public comment? All right, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the close public comment and bring it back. I think the only item that we have left is adjournment. What's our, do you have the date of our next meeting, Rob? I don't have it handy, right?
It's about 3 weeks from now.
It's the 15th, correct?
Yeah. Let me get there on the iPhone here. I think it is the 15th.
Yeah, June 15th, correct. Okay, so then we'll adjourn, and our next meeting will be June 15th in this location at 1:30. Thank you.